And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Join us this Saturday for an all-new episode of The Athletic NBA Show, Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by me, Andrew Schlecht. I'll be joined by my co-hosts Alex Spears and many of the Athletic beat writers that you know and love. We will recap the week of the NBA, play some NBA trivia, and just overall talk about the league that we love most. So while you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee on Saturday morning, listen to Saturday Slammin' Jam on The Athletic NBA Show.
Yo, it's Zach Harper, host of the Basketball Buds, right here on The Athletic NBA Show. Join me and the fellas, Waz, Trey, Jay, and Dave, for a new episode every Monday morning. What's Jay King going to say that lights the podcast on fire? What's that problematic envelope that Waz is going to keep pushing? Every single Monday, tune in to find out. That's every Monday morning right here on The Athletic NBA Show.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Coming up on today's
Network.
Show, we ask, why isn't my guy getting enough foul calls? We challenge the myth that seating doesn't matter, and we continue the circle of life.
This is Nerdish, You Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Moe DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Yay! Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday. I'm Dave Dufour, and that means it's Nerdish, She Wrote. I'm joined, as I am every week, by Seth and Moe. What's up, fellas? Anything happening? Anything good?
Yeah, man, I got like a family of ducks living in the pool.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, it's been pretty interesting.
You're going to have some eggs in your backyard soon.
I guess. I don't know. Somebody tweeted at me once and said that could ruin the pool, but I'm like, I haven't been in the pool for a very long time. So
I think the pool will probably be okay. I mean, you don't want a duck pool party happening?
I kind of do.
Because ducks are disgusting.
I kind of do. It's kind of cool. It's sort of they're relatively peaceful.
Ducks are delicious.
Have you fed them?
No,
they are delicious.
I haven't fed them, and they are delicious. I'm not going to kill these, though. Don't, PETA, don't come at me. I'm not doing anything. But they're fun to – they're just kind of peaceful and nice to watch.
Yeah, PETA, come at me. I eat duck. It's delicious.
Yeah, no, I didn't want them to think I was killing the duck. That was the
– I mean, how you don't want to eat the duck alive? That's way worse.
This week on Murder, She Wrote.
Ducks. Yeah, I'm not actually killing these ducks because then you have to pluck the feathers and all that. Well, it's too much work for me.
Yeah, well, you definitely want to pluck the feathers on a duck because the skin is so good. All right, look, let's get into the show. There is an epidemic, and we know how fans are. We know that fans have their favorite players that they love to hate. They have the referees that they love to hate. I don't even know half the referees by name, by the way. Just throwing that out there. That's how little I pay attention to those referees. But guys, my favorite player doesn't get fouled enough. He's not getting enough calls. Zion Williamson gets blocked by Nikola Jokic at the basket in their game the other night and is very clearly fouled, but it's okay. It's par for the course because Zion gets no respect, Seth. Is this right?
I'm more shocked Pukaszewski's not your favorite player.
Well, first of all, it's not just fans. It's coaches, it's players, it's execs, it's owners, it's – you know, local broadcasters, it's everybody. Everyone thinks that their guy is uniquely getting screwed by the refs. And so maybe if everyone's getting screwed, then nobody is. And just the standard for what's a foul is higher than you'd like to think it is. So I think that's part one. If everyone is upset at the same thing, then maybe you're just, you know, measuring wrong. Secondly, this is something that I've looked at back in the day, and like the best players tend to get a better whistle pretty strongly than lesser players. And that comes up, you look at, you know, where they're shooting from, where the defenders are, how fast players are moving, and so on and so forth. And, you know, looking at all that, like, yeah, your Giannis's, your Harden's, your Kawhi's, they get plenty of foul calls. Now, some of that is a reflection of part of why they're the best players, is they are able to create advantages in sort of subtle ways that might not show up in broader looks at things. So, you know, you get a little bit ahead of a guy, or you get just the right angle, or figure out how James Harden gets his arm just under a guy. So those little tricks of the trade are part of what makes them the best player. So that's part of why. I don't think it's like this referee conspiracy that gives, you know, more benefit of the doubt to the best players. I think the best players, part of why they get these calls is they're able to, you know, get advantages. And when you have an advantage, you get fouled.
Yeah, it's funny. This is one of those things. This is one of the rare times where I'm like, this is all the eye test just screwing it up. I don't think there's a real kind of conspiracy in that sense and things like that. It's something Seth said that's really important is like, look where your guys are shooting shots from. You know, and Zion is a different case, but like Paul George was complaining that he wasn't getting to the free throw line enough. I'm like, cool. You don't drive to the basket a lot. You know, Paul George is a guy that's more of a jump shooter. Same thing with Devin Booker and things like that. I think sometimes we got to look at where guys are getting their shots from, because you're not putting the onus on referees when you're not driving to the rim.
It's demonstrable.
I think that's,
you look at where the foul rates, you know, not to go nerd numbers right away, but you know, you look at foul rates based on where a shot is on the floor, and you're like two and a half times as likely to get fouled on a shot at the rim as you are a mid-range jumper. It might even be more than that. Like you know, if you're shooting a bunch of pull-ups, unless you're DeMar DeRozan, you're not going to get fouled.
Yeah. And I think Seth, since we're going to go a little bit, we just kind of went a bit nerdy on the numbers. How would you statistically show this? Like, what numbers should people see, want to look at when it's like, hey, I want to see if my guy is getting to the free throw line enough?
I mean, the quickest is look at how many shots they shoot in the restricted area versus how many free throws they take is probably one of the quickest ways to look at it. Either shots in the restricted area or just shots in the paint, because shots in the paint are the ones which tend to draw fouls. And you know, if you look at the guys who lead the league in free throws, they're the guys who get to the rim most, by and large. It's not 1-to-1, but it's not a surprise.
Yeah, and usage rate plays a role too, right? Like how much a guy has, you know, the ball in his hands and things like that. Like Joel Embiid goes to the line all the time, and because he's in the post all the time, almost, you know, and that's where he's able to draw those fouls.
Because he's shooting shots where a defender is close enough to foul him. Like if a guy, you know, Clint Capella maybe doesn't go to the line very much, even though all he does is dunk, because he's just catching the ball above the rim and dunking it, and it's not really in a spot where he's going to get fouled.
With Zion in particular, yeah. I took a look at this. He's eighth in free throw rate. Okay, that to me, that seems fine. It's like, okay, he's up toward the top, but he's a decent enough free throw shooter that he's not getting a lot of like hack-a whistles. So Dwight Howard leads the league in free throw rate, but that's a guy you want shooting free throws. So that makes sense. But with Zion, he also has just this incredible touch around the basket. And I wonder if there's a little bit, if we see a little bit of a depression in free throw numbers for him, or at least what we should reasonably expect. I wonder if he's making too many shots at the basket, and we know that referees love to watch whether the ball goes in or not, and maybe that adds or detracts a little bit from the number of free throws he gets to shoot. I mean, I'm looking for a human.
I'm thinking it's a little different than that. So it's a similar idea, okay, but different. So, I mean, we've kind of established, you know, the usage efficiency curve is something that we've known has existed for a long time. Like the more shots you take, the harder your shots tend to get because you have to work harder to get them. Zion takes so many more shots at the rim than anybody else ever. I've tweeted this graph out a bunch of different ways, a bunch of different times. He's up around, you know, 18, 20 rim attempts per 100 possessions for his career. The next highest guys are at like 12. So just a massive outlier in that. And part of that is also part of the reason why he, was it,
Chris Herring, I think, wrote recently about him getting blocked at the rim a lot. And it's sort of the same thing. When he's going in there, he is taking shots. He's taking harder shots at the rim than most guys would, because to get to those 18 per 100, like, you know, there's that, you know, the floating jackknife, throw my body into a guy, flip up a let, like, nobody else is doing that. So he's not, I talked earlier about, you know, creating the advantage to get the foul call. As he's getting into those more difficult shots, there are more of them relatively that are, I'm just contorting myself to try to get this up, rather than I've just beat this guy completely to the basket and he's got to hack me or I'm going to dunk it.
It's the Kyrie Irving thing. Kyrie Irving doesn't really get to the free throw line, and it's because he goes around contact so often.
Derrick Rose Zion, early though, in his career, too.
We see him play so physically.
Derrick Rose, like in his MVP.
Yeah.
That was a big reason why his MVP year was one of his better years. Is that was like the first year where he actually like drew contact on his attempts at the basket instead of up and around and over guys.
And it goes back to Mo's point about the eye test kind of fooling you, because we watch Zion be so physical. I mean, he's incredibly physical. And so I understand. I think that people think he gets fouled maybe a lot more than he does. And I'm not saying that refs don't miss stuff with him. I think when you've got these physical outliers like Shaq and Zion and LeBron, and you are going to miss a lot more than on average. But I do think that that feeds right into Mo's point that the eye test kind of fools us a bit.
I think some of it, too, is, you know, one with Zion in particular, and this is something we saw with Shaq a lot, you know, is he is so big. It's hard to figure out sometimes what is an actual foul. Now, listen, last night, Jokic hacked him. Like, it's no question. They missed the call.
It was a hack.
They missed the call. That's, you know, whatever. I'm fine with it, because here's the other thing, and this is the most important thing. We don't need more free throws in this game. Like, you're complaining about guys not going to the free throw line. I want less of this.
Well, and Zion in particular, he's taking almost 9 free throws a game. I think I'm okay with this, right? Like, it's okay. But now there are guys like Steph Curry can't get a good whistle. I think that he is as bad as Shaq to officiate, because you have to pay attention to Steph Curry and start officiating him at half court.
But again, it kind of goes just more to his shot profiles. Like, when he is getting something in the restricted area, it's usually off of a back cut or something like that. It's usually an open look. It's one of those instances where there are guys not there to foul him. Yes, he has moments where he drives the lane off the pick and roll and things like that. But, you know, for the most part, he's another one of those guys where you just look at his shot profile. Look at his shots around the rim. It'd be a fun study if somebody wanted to do, because Lord knows I'm not going to do it. Just looking at where guys are, the defenders are when he's at the rim, you know, and how often is it off of a back cut or something where, you know, he just has a ton of open space.
And another big difference between someone like Steph and, you know, Zion or Shaq or Giannis or LeBron is, do they really want more crackdown on physicality in that area? If that crackdown is adjudicated evenly, like, okay, Zion gets hit, but Zion does a lot of hitting. And, you know, it's, you know, you either let a lot go or let nothing go. And I think for someone of his profile, letting a lot go is on balance a win.
Yeah, I think it's a fake problem, right? And I know that it was, you know, we were talking about this in our pre-show. Like, this is something to talk about. Mo, you mentioned someone asking you if Devin Booker's getting a good whistle. And I think he is. But I just think that the big calls feel high profile when your team matters. And a bunch of these teams are seeing their teams matter or a bunch of these fans are seeing their teams matter for the first
time.
It's
also, it's peak fandom. It's peak fandom. You're getting screwed. You feel like you're getting screwed. Your team's losing. You feel like you're getting screwed. I do it with USC football all the time.
Steph Curry's the only guy actually getting screwed. That's just how I feel.
But to bring it full circle to Mo's point about kind of like the eye test and perception is you remember the missed call very deeply, and that Burns. And you just kind of like, oh, yeah, he went to the line like he's supposed to. Oh, he maybe this is a tough call, but he earned it because he beat the guy. So he got the benefit of that. Like you rationalize the generous calls that he gets, and the one that is missed is just like flaming anger. And it's just you, that's your perception messing with you as much as it is a real thing.
All right, so we agree this is kind of a fake problem.
Oh, it's definitely a fake problem. Not even kind of. Yeah. It's a fake problem. We're myth-busting today. Like, this is one of them. We've just busted it up.
That's right. And we're going to move on to another one after this break. Okay, we busted one myth, and now we got another one. Because Mo was hot about this, because he's hearing too many people say that the seating just doesn't matter. And specifically, talking about the Lakers, I think, you know, when you look at where they're at in the standings, as we record this on Thursday afternoon, the Lakers are currently fifth. They have a game and a half lead over the Mavericks. Okay. That's a huge game and a half, because it means as of right now, you're playing the Nuggets or you're playing the Clippers in the first round. And so, Mo, I agree with you. I think the seeding does matter. And this year more than ever.
I think seeding across the board, everybody always says it. You know, you always hear players even say, oh, like seeding's not as big a deal to us this year or whatnot. And some of it's tied into home court advantage or things like that. For me, it's all about your matchups and your road to the finals. You know, like for me, I look at the Eastern Conference, and honestly, I think whoever gets the one seed in the East has the best chance to go to the finals, because 2-3 will probably have to play each other, right? And that's, you know, that's a combination of Philly and Milwaukee and Brooklyn. You know, that's a brutal matchup. And so if you finish second in the East, and right now Philly is there, right? Right now, your matchup, assuming the play-in tournament works out the way it's supposed to and goes chalk, Miami's your first-round matchup. Your second-round matchup is Milwaukee, and your conference final matchup, assuming you get past Milwaukee, is Brooklyn. That's a tough-ass road to the finals. Like, that matters, you know? And same, you know, and flip it around for all the other things. I think, you know, the top seed, your second-round matchup most likely is, you know, Atlanta or New York. Yes.
Yeah. The East is crazy because we have the differentiation of the top three in the East. Like there's a clear line of demarcation between the Nets, Sixers, and Bucks and everyone else. No one else is a serious contender. And so if you're not the one seed, you are being absolutely hosed in the East.
And I think that's a useful contrast with the West, where I kind of think that seeding matters, but more insofar as you want to be on the opposite side of the bracket as the Lakers. I mean, isn't that a bigger deal than I mean, again, assuming LeBron and AD are right by the playoffs, but that's, you know, you're talking about avoiding the toughest matchups for as long as possible. Well, there it is. That's the toughest matchup. I think because the East is so – the standings so reflect how playoff dangerous the teams are, that holds pure. Whereas the West, it's a little bit more jumbled, and some of that is, you know, Denver is not going to be as good a playoff team as the record's going to indicate. The Lakers are going to be a better playoff team than the record is going to indicate. So that flips it up a little bit, I think.
And there's no clarity right now. I mean, we're so close to the playoffs. And as of right now, you look at the West, the Jazz are up one game on the Suns. Well, guess what? They play tonight, Friday night. The Clippers are one game up on the Nuggets. They play next week. I mean, the schedule makers somehow lucked into the playoffs starting 2 weeks early, essentially, because all of this jockeying for seeding actually does matter this year.
I mean, don't leave out the fact that Dallas is just a game and a half behind the Lakers and own the season series. Like, they just have to tie the Lakers in terms of that record. And then that puts a situation where, like, I don't think this is a good thing for the league and the playoffs as a whole, but the Clippers and Lakers have a good chance of matching up in the first round.
Let's go.
Either as a 3-6 or 4-5. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know if that's a great thing we really want, but I think that's a brutal matchup for both teams. You know, I think that becomes a challenging thing. I think Clippers can give the Lakers the biggest run in the playoffs. And LeBron and AD are still trying to work their way back into the flow. For the Clippers, that's the last team you want to face in the first round.
Well, and let's talk about that in particular, because the Lakers' schedule coming up, I mean, they've got Sacramento, and then they have Toronto, which is not a pushover ever, even if they're bad. But then they have Denver, the Clippers, the Blazers, the Suns, and the Knicks. Now, the Knicks, I think the Lakers are better than the Knicks, but the Knicks are tough. That is not easy. I don't know, man. I'm starting to feel like the Lakers legitimately are going to be the sixth seed.
I mean, it's certainly possible. I think, you know, hell, they're only two games away from being in the play-in game. So I don't think that's going to happen, but it's all of this is plausible in that scenario. And this is just wildly up and down in the sense of like no clarity. The only team I feel comfortable in both conferences, I could say like, okay, I feel pretty good. Feel pretty confident Milwaukee's going to finish third. Yeah. That's about it.
Yeah.
So just having this discussion, this is yet another kind of but LeBron caveat that sort of proves a general rule. We care about seeding, but the Lakers kind of don't because LeBron. I mean, this you know reminds me. I think we might have talked about this earlier on an earlier show, but. One year in Milwaukee, we were getting ready for the playoffs and trying to figure out who we wanted to play. And it was like, it was LeBron's last year in Cleveland, I'm pretty sure. And it was like, by every metric available, they were the weakest regular season team. And so, like, if we're just running the numbers straight, it's like, yeah, we want to play them. It's like, no, that's the last team we want to play because we know that, right. that the season doesn't reflect them. Like in totality. And that's the same thing this year. Like, okay, the Lakers are the sixth seed. Going into the playoffs, aren't they still the favorite because LeBron?
Yeah. Well, and also what's crazy is that they could be the sixth seed with the number one defense.
Yeah.
That had missed two of its best players for the majority of the season. That's the thing about the Lakers that I continue to – even me continue to overlook is that, yes, we keep saying it's all about LeBron and AD. But the truth of the matter is maybe LeBron and AD don't have to be 100%. Maybe they could just be 90%.
You haven't looked at their offense. You haven't looked at their offense, Dave.
Offense is bad, but LeBron at 90% finds open shooters. He's still going to be guarded. Now, if he's a step slow, like for LeBron, I still think that's probably enough.
No, I mean,
it depends on if AD can look better than he has so far because AD has looked
rough. I think there's an issue in the sense of like, normally, you're right, Seth, like, but LeBron. I think coming back from this injury, it's going to be a minute. You know, I think it's going to be a minute, you know, before he's fully in the flow. So when he comes back is going to matter and how much time he has under his belt. But also them figuring out how to play with Andre Drummond, which, you know, they kind of – it's been a struggle for AD and him trying to figure that out. You know, just the first few games.
If anyone figures it out, let me know.
Right. But I think, you know, so this is the year for the Lakers where seeding does matter because you would want to play Denver in the first round because it's presumably the easier matchup. If you have to come out of the gates and have to figure out how you're going to guard Kawhi and Paul George in the first round, that's brutal. And then if you win Phoenix,
think of how crazy it is. Think of how crazy it is. You want to play. Yeah, we want to get the MVP in the first round.
Yeah, no, it is. But you know what? Not the first time. Golden State wanted the Mavs that year. The We Believe Warriors, because they knew they could beat them. But this is just, I mean, obviously for a crazy circumstance for Denver, you know, that matters. Normally we would be like, holy shit, this Denver Lakers series is going to be nuts.
What? And here's another thing that, I mean, and this isn't necessarily unique because often the 7 and 8 seeds are still in play as we come into the last week or two of the season. But if you're Utah and Phoenix, you're not going to know who you're playing until basically the series starts. And you could get the Warriors. I know that this Warriors team is not good, but if I'm Utah, I just don't want to do that. I don't want to walk into – I don't know. I would be very nervous to play a playoff series against Steph
Curry. I wonder if they're sending advanced scouts to help the San Antonio Spurs. You know, like, hey, guys, come on, man. You got to get that 8 seed.
Yeah. I don't know. The West playoff is going to be just an absolute
I think the East is going to be kind of nuts. Listen, the one thing I'll say, you know, your first round matchup, if you're the one seed in the East, is probably going to be Washington, who's been great defensively over the past month. I mean, who knows how it's going to hold up. But then you got to face Beal, who can go nuclear, and Russell Westbrook, who, you know, has amazing runs and very bad runs. Like, there's a whole lot of unpredictability there in that sense. Like, that's a tough opening matchup for the one seed.
I wrote about this week, the Wizards. Like, I think their defense is kind of real. They were – the start of the year, their defense was rough.
Non-existent. Yeah, but rough is not enough.
But there were two things kind of going on. One is they had terrible interior defense, and two, they're kind of getting beat hard with, like, the three-point variant stick. At the start of the year, their center rotation was Mo Wagner and Thomas Bryant. Their center rotation is now three really good rim protectors in Alex Len and Robin Lopez and Daniel Gafford, who I said at the trade deadline that was a nice pickup for them. And I'll just, you know, good.
Toot your own horn.
I will definitely do my own horn. But on the,
I would like Jay to go back and find the tape. I want proof.
No, I at minimum have a tweet, so I have receipts. I have receipts. But also, like, now they're like, the opponents aren't making every open three like they were at the start of the year. So it's kind of
right.
You know, they're better and luckier. And so it's pretty good. Like,
but that's a tough first round. Well,
making
matchup.
The change.
Yeah, exactly.
Making the change in the middle allowed them to actually defend better on the perimeter by a lot. I mean, I just think that those guys, it's pretty obvious that they weren't comfortable with the guys that were backing them up. You could see that
a lot of short closeouts. If you know you're giving up a dunk if you get blown by.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, the playoffs are going to be wild. And you know, I've had a lot of people ask how I feel about the play-in. And the truth of the matter is, I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it because I just didn't think it would be that important or matter. And these teams are not good teams necessarily, but they are definitely. I mean, Portland and Memphis are for sure playoff teams, right? Well, they're the 7-8 seed. The Spurs have been essentially the 8 seed all year as far as the way that they've played. And then you have the Warriors that are able to overachieve because of Steph Curry. And I can't tell you who's going to come out of that 9-10 matchup.
It's going to be nuts. I mean, this is the play-in game is working. I mean, just think about the fact that Washington probably would have gone to tank mode a few weeks ago, and now, you know, lo and behold, go on a hot streak, and now they're in the two games up and in the playing game, you know, and pretty comfortably in that situation. So I think it's it's worked. You know, I have my complaints. I've verbalized them enough, but it's worked. You got to give them credit. It matters.
It's something we kind of see every year where teams that are sort of on the bubble. Even though if you're kind of rational about it, it's like maybe one more lottery pick would be better for us than sneaking in and getting to use our favorite term, windshielded in the first round of the playoffs. But teams that get put in that situation always go for it. Like the only counterexample is basically like Oklahoma City was really frisky until like Sam Presti was like, no. You're injured, yes. You're injured. Poku, do your thing. And then turn their season around.
Poku with not a high enough free throw rate.
Underrated thing here for the Lakers, though, they're going to have a better draft pick. Slightly. This is always something I was pushing. I was like, you know, I wonder if LeBron, this was in the Cleveland years, could LeBron tank to the 8 seed and still make the finals?
Easily.
Probably.
Yeah.
That's the next level of tank your playoff positioning for a better draft.
But to me, the greater point about this whole seeding thing is your road to the finals matters, and you have to kind of, and teams look at that. And I think that's kind of the thing that's more important to me than home court, even, you know, to a degree. Like, home court matters for some teams more than others, especially the younger teams, but it is your road to the finals that makes a difference. And just looking at it, like, I'm like, man, whoever finishes second in the East, it's got a tough ass road.
I mean, even the difference between, say, you're the one seed and the eight seed has a 5% chance of beating you, and the 2 seed and the 7 seed has a 15% chance of beating you. That's a huge, if you want to like do the combined probability of getting to a certain point in the playoffs, that's just a massive difference. Like, we don't have to worry about that versus we have to worry about a little. It's just a big deal. So absolutely, I agree with you.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
And now another installment of the NBA Circle of Life. Everyone's clamoring for it. They want to know who's next. Well, we're at the Star is Born phase, guys. And this is, of course, when you are fortunate enough to be able to draft that franchise cornerstone. Your Luka Doncic, your Trae Young, your Ja Morant, your LaMelo Ball, maybe. Maybe. I know you're making a face at Trae Young, Seth. He's at least a franchise cornerstone.
I'm sorry, I thought you said Bogdan Bogdanovic.
Oh boy, here we go.
Well, so these teams, they have started the process. They did the tank. They made the picks. They got the players. And now you've got to do the hard part. And that's build around these guys. And so you've got your first piece. You look at Dallas. They get Luka Doncic. They make a move and get Kristaps Porzingis. And we've talked about this. And Atlanta, because their paths were pretty similar, although I would say Atlanta really shoved all his chips in the table last offseason. And then Charlotte and Atlanta, Charlotte and Memphis, Charlotte's just getting there. They just drafted LaMelo Ball, made a great signing, Gordon Hayward, to add another guy around those young guys. It has clearly paid off. They're going to make the playoffs. This is a great story. And then Memphis, we've gotten to see the last few years, I mean, Ja Morant has just been electric. And they've drafted extremely well. I mean, that's basically draft Twitter in the NBA right there. So, guys, I guess let's start with Dallas. Do we like the path that they're on? I mean, they're currently the 7th or 6th seed. We talked about that. They have a chance to be the 5th seed. Been an up-and-down season, very inconsistent. It's been this way for everyone. So, we got to take everything with a grain of salt, but do you guys feel like Dallas is moving in the right direction, or are they just kind of spinning their wheels a little bit?
I think they are. I mean, like, what are our expectations? You know, were we looking at, I mean, this is a team that's like going into this year, it wasn't like, hey, they should win a championship this year, right? Like, they're in that.
I agree.
They're in the early stage of this circle of life, you know? And I think it's along those lines of they're still figuring out. They got a long road with Luka, knock on wood, that he, you know, stays healthy and things like that. But they have a long future with him. So they're just in the beginning stages of this. So, yeah, we shouldn't be going nuts of like they're completely screwed for their future. It's just the start of this.
Let me sort of tweak this a little bit. Does it feel like this team has a an artificially low ceiling right now. Because I don't think that they can play with the big boys. I don't think you could put them in a series against the Clippers this year and expect them to do what they did last year. There's just no way. It's not the same team. The Clippers are way better.
I think that's true. How they got there is a more interesting question. I think that they've made, you know, moves that I think from looking at them from beforehand you like, and they haven't like worked out. Like, I think we all liked the Seth Curry for Josh Richardson trade. That hasn't worked out for them. Doesn't mean it was a bad trade. It you know, for whatever reason, it hasn't quite clicked for Josh Richardson. I think that like, due to injury issues and other stuff, like, you know, I don't think that they've got everything they hope for out of the Porzingis trade. And again, I don't think that means it was that's the kind of trade you make when you're trying to build. And
yeah, absolutely.
And you know, you talk about pushing your chips in, you make your bet and the wheel spins and then what happens. And then you have to be, you know, you have to be confident enough that your process to get there was good enough that you live with the outcome. So I don't like it. It's hard. You have to make good decisions and then things go right. And they may be on the first sort of steps of making decent to good decisions and things just not quite breaking right, which happens to a lot.
The thing is too. Yeah. And the thing is too, and this is kind of important, is they're in a good situation going forward. You know, it's not like they're extremely tied cap space wise. I think they have a chance to make a big cap space move this summer if they wanted to.
They can let Josh Richardson walk this summer.
Yeah, I mean, there's things they got to do and stuff like that. They're in a good position. Like, again, they're in the fun, we're going to college phase of the circle of life. Like, they're about to go partying, you know, and things like that. And
oh, no, they're partying right now. No, like, they're not partying right now.
At the start of their senior year, worried about getting a job now. So they're a little further along. Like, they're not just –
okay. Yeah, I think that's fine. That's a good way to put it. But they're in a good situation in that sense. You know, I don't think they're somebody like, I'm worried about their long-term future. You know, as long as Luka's there and they're healthy, you know, I think they're going to
be – Well, that's the thing, right?
Well, health is going to be a thing for everybody. But I think
if Luka's there, stop. Right? Like, and I don't want to start this thing already.
No, you just did. You just did.
But hang on. No, hang on. The money part does start to creep up on them because Luka's got an extension coming up, right? So you now are entering a different phase.
Okay. No, that's
if you're there. Because the money is starting to pile up. Okay. I don't mean that he's gonna leave. I just mean that you do have to now, like, the clock has started because financially you're in a different position. Porzingis already got his deal. Luka's going to get his. And now you got to find a way to make it work on the margins. And that's hard.
I think they're not the only of this group that's in that spot. I mean, you talked about Atlanta kind of pushing chips in. They, you know, they have some extension decisions this summer. They gave Gallinari a lot of money. They gave Bogdanovich a lot of money. You know, Memphis,
they're going to have to pay Hunter and Reddish in a couple years.
Herter. But Memphis is going to be coming up on this situation soon too. And I think we may have talked about this at the start of the year, or maybe I was on a Memphis radio show and talking about like what to do with Dylan Brooks, who's a guy who is the exact kind of guy that can be sort of almost an impediment for a team trying to graduate. Like, he's a guy who helped you get to a certain point and isn't going to take you any farther as a top guy.
He's Monte Ellis. He's Monte Ellis. And they need to probably move on from Dylan Brooks just because they have other guys that I think have higher ceilings that need opportunity.
But, you know, like, but here's the thing, besides just getting bogged down in each team situation, this is the normal problem for everybody in this circle of life situation. Dave mentioned, like, okay, your clock starts. Your clock starts as soon as you realize, oh, we have that guy. And whether it's on day one of the draft or, you know, they develop into that guy all of a sudden, this is the normal problem in this section of our program.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your experience, Mo, because you actually kind of lived through this part of it, right? Like, you were there for Blake.
I was and I wasn't.
You were
I
there.
Was and I wasn't. I was. I drafted okay. him, then went to San Antonio. So I missed the first 2 years.
Okay,
but like it is. But that was the thing. I came back for the lockout, and we made big swings that into that thing before we even made the Chris Paul trade. We picked up Chauncey right. Billups and amnesty waivers, and you know he was threatening to even retire before coming. And then we get Chris Paul in the like we made the big moves. And we graduated, but the truth is, in this instance, with us with the Clippers, is we graduated too early, because Blake wasn't ready for what he needed to be ready once we had those guys, and that's something that does happen in this instance. Is teams kind of rush in too early in their scenario. It wasn't we weren't going to pass up on any of these guys, but it was just a tough deal.
From the outside looking in, I kind of saw almost a different problem. And the problem that some of these teams now are facing is like the little mistakes added up. Like, you know, mm-hmm. were you there? There was the summer that you signed like Spencer Haas, the mid-level, and Jordan Farmer to the biannual. And it's like, and we're hard capped after making these and we needed depth. And these two guys gave us nothing. And just like missing on those and, you know, for Memphis and Charlotte has you know, the Malik Monk decision to come up with this summer. They've got extension decisions starting to come up this summer and next summer. You know, those mistakes you make now, when it's 2 and 3 years down the road, if you've got 5, 10, 15 million extra on these mistakes you've made, more even for, you know, with the Clippers and the Ballmer money, you could kind of buy your way out of some problems. Memphis and Charlotte ain't doing that. So these right. like getting these little things right now, like even though it's not like time to graduate yet, you know, this is your GPA that goes on the resume.
Right. It's hard.
Let me ask you guys, because you know, Dallas isn't a place I think of for marquee free agents. Could Luka change that, you think? I mean, Dallas may have to overpay a little bit at first. Like, I think Atlanta just showed us that if you want to become a free agent destination, you're going to have to spend money to get people to come there, change the franchise. You know, Atlanta making the playoffs this year, I think is a big deal for them. I mean, obviously they added talent and they spent a lot of money, but it also says, hey, look, we're willing to spend money to make a better team. And it pans out. I think from a free agent marketing perspective, that's good. But Dallas, are people going to come and play with Luka, or are they going to have to overpay?
I think it's going to be a little bit of both, especially or at least early on right now. You know, I think, listen, guys will go where they have the chance to make money and win a championship. And I think that's kind of what they got to see. And I think right now, Luka looks like he's fun to play with, you know, and I think it would be an interesting thing to see how it plays out. But, you know, they got to get further along where they got to, I think Seth's right, they got to nail a couple of these decisions, you know, these small decisions to really kind of make it an enticing place, because guys want to win, you know, and I think that's ultimately going to be a thing that's going to matter the most, is teams, guys are going to look at it going like, can I win a championship here?
And Charlotte, to me, is in the worst position because they got a little bit too good too fast. Making the playoffs this year is great. It's a great story, but they also, I feel like they could use another high draft pick. Am I crazy here?
Yeah.
I just worry that because they're not going to get free agents, Gordon Hayward aside, I just don't think Charlotte's ever going to be able to get the pieces around LaMelo and Bridges and PJ Washington to be a real.
They can go at this the other way, though. Part of why they've been good this year is they've got, you know, a lot of good young players. And so, you know, your cap space isn't just to go out and sign guys. You can also trade for guys. And part of trading for guys is having, you know, some interesting young players. So having enough of those guys around maybe makes them, especially, you know, a guy decides he wants to play with LaMelo and there's something that can be worked out. Maybe it costs you a PJ Washington or you know, Terry Rozier or somebody else on that. But those are, that's part of why you do these little things to make your team better. It's not just that, like, okay, we've drafted this guy in the second round and he worked out. We've signed this guy to a value contract and he's worked out. sometimes that's for when your team is going to be good, but that's also so when the time comes for the big opportunity to hit. This is, you know, the Daryl Morey philosophy is like we're hitting these singles, and that's, you know, putting people on base. So when times take the big swing, we can do it. We can really cash in on that. And so just being ready to do that is also part of the knowing when to flip that switch is really hard.
The consolidation trade, so to speak. And I think Atlanta is going to have to do that for sure. They've got too many young guys that are good enough to get assets that just aren't going to be able to break into that rotation when they're at full.
But also
I think that they're going to have
to. I want to go in also a little bit, Dave, on like making the playoffs is never really a bad thing. You know, I think it also shows that like, hey, look, we're competent as an organization. And that's something that we haven't been able to say too much about Charlotte over the years, you know, but they're looking in a situation where it's like, look, we're pretty competent. Look at that roster next year. I mean, assuming these guys come back and it's the same roster, I kind of look at going like, that's a team that's probably going to be in the playoff hunt and in the mix, you know, and have a chance. So I think it's going to be along those lines. You know, I don't know.
They're upgraded if center from being good.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's kind of, and I don't know if that's going to be hard for them to get. You know, I don't think it's going to be a real issue for them. And I think, look at some of the guys that have, Miles Bridges has blown up in the last 2-3 weeks, you know, with how well he's playing in development. And maybe that's, it's a success point. Maybe that's just the guy, like, hey, that's the guy that's going to get us the guy, you know, or whatnot. And I think those are kind of the important things there. And I think this is, I like where Charlotte's going.
So do I. I mean, they've got a great coach. They clearly have a great system. I mean, they've completely embraced this ball movement and I mean, a little bit of basketball joy there. I mean, I don't want to steal from the Warriors, but I mean, when you watch them, like
they're having fun.
You can
feel
it.
Fun.
How much of that is the is the broadcasters going crazy? Which I love, by the way. I love.
They're amazing.
I love their broadcast.
Yeah,
the broadcast is great.
We got to get those guys on the show. I think we got to get both of those guys on the show. Maybe we just need to give them the show for a week or something. But those guys are, to me, I think that's the best broadcast pair in the league this season.
I think they're the most excited broadcast pair, so it makes it fun. I have a lot of – there's actually some really good broadcast teams out there. Shout out to the Nets with their squad. I just think everybody's kind of got – there have been some good ones. But – I know we're going to wrap soon, but I just think the most important thing about this life cycle, when you have these guys, it's the next moves, you know, it's those next moves. And I think Seth nailed it with everything he said there. It's all those small moves here on the edges that are going to make a difference for the team. You know, can they move? Can they graduate? And I think sometimes the graduation part is the hardest thing to do.
As we wrap up this week, we wanted to take a second and shout out my good buddy, Jonathan Charks, who works for The Ringer. He was diagnosed with cancer last week and has started treatment. And I know he listens to this show because he complains to me that sometimes the takes aren't hot enough and he needs more hot takes. And I know he loves hot takes. So I hope he's listening right now and I hope he's comfortable. I texted him this morning. And we love you, John, and we hope that, you know, you make it through this okay. And can't wait to have another burger with you, man. That's going to do it for this week. We'll catch you guys next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.